I think there was a lot of money sitting on the fence, and people who traditionally don't think at all about gold and silver now wavering. If we see a big sell-off from here, maybe that changes that. But I think it's also possible we could see an even bigger wave come in if you do get a resumption in prices. And well, hello there, my friends. Chris Marcus here with you for Arcadia Economics. And for today's show, we actually have some coverage from the New Orleans Investment Conference just about a week and a half ago, where I sat down with the great Charlotte McLeod, talked about what was happening with silver. And actually, you can look back, see if I got things right about a week or so ago and how they played out so far. And one last note I'll mention before we start, did attend the Silver Institute dinner last Thursday, and I guess my key takeaway was that Philip Newman, who was there for on behalf of Metals Focus and did a presentation during dinner, I asked my question of, did they think this was a temporary band-aid, the 55 million ounces of silver that have gone over to London, or a long-term solution? And let's just say I didn't find anyone there who wanted to short the idea of this being a temporary band-aid. So perhaps even bigger takeaway is that I know there's a tendency to think that the banks or the government knows how this is going to play out, although I would point out that's not the case. There's time on the clock, game is tied in the fourth quarter. We'll see what happens, although I will stand by my claim that it seems hard to imagine, especially with the silver supply also getting low in China now, but in either case, just some things to think about. And with that said, here is today's show.
I'm Charlotte McLeod with investingnews.com, and here today with me is Chris Marcus, founder of Arcadia Economics. Thank you so much for being here, the first time in person.
Charlotte, I'm honored to be here. It's just wonderful to see you as always, and certainly, as usual, interesting times in gold and silver land, and nice to be here in New Orleans, where people seem happier this year than last time I remember, so thanks as always for having me.
Of course, of course. We've got lots to get into today. And I thought, since we're at the conference, the New Orleans Investment Conference, you've been out and about on the show floor today. Maybe you can tell me any takeaways you have on sentiment, key thoughts that you've been hearing from people.
Well, I guess the main thing is that I heard from Brian London, who runs the show. I think they're 25% higher than they were expected or than normal. So I think it makes sense. You see, was not here the last couple of years, but he was saying, as opposed to the recent years, there's more people, which obviously I think the gold and silver long timers are a bit happier these days than they've been in recent years. And also, I'll follow up on that, but I would imagine we have seen, as you and I have talked about before, generalist and mainstream money coming in. Started picking up earlier this year, especially in the past couple months when we had silver over 50, gold up to almost $4,400. So there could be a little bit of that here. I think it's also going to be interesting. We're at this point where if we have a resumption of the rally, I think there was a lot of money sitting on the fence, and people who traditionally don't think at all about gold and silver now wavering. If we see a big sell-off from here, maybe that changes that, but I think it's also possible we could see an even bigger wave come in if you do get a resumption in prices. And I'm sure there's a lot of people here trying to figure that out and imagine what's coming next. So
yeah, there's definitely a lot of people here. I think it's mixed is what I'm getting so far. There's people who are definitely optimistic and they see this pullback as a buying opportunity. And there are also people who are a little bit worried and wondering, all right, well, they moved so far. Are we going on the way back down? And it kind of goes back to what we've been talking about in our previous interview. When are people going to feel happy and good about the silver price? So any thoughts, further thoughts you would add on the direction of silver?
Yes, I would love to. Thank you for asking. First of all, if people are happy or not,
yeah.
I mean, I get it. Everyone has their own different expectations, although to the degree that there are people who have been waiting from 1980 to this year for silver to break 50. It went up to, I think, the spot price even broke 54 or got close to it. So, I mean, it's at an all-time record high. I hope people who have been investing in this for a while are at least smiling or
even aside from that, taking a step back, whether it's reached the price you want or not, I think it's important to take a step back and think about, for most people, it's been a pretty long journey. You've gotten your teeth kicked in for years at a time. And if nothing else, just appreciating all these things that have happened. And I think one of the things that's challenging for people is they invest in gold and silver. They see the inflation. They see the wild stuff that's going on. And for years, they didn't really see that reflected in the price. And I think that's something that's been helpful where, you know, there's this tendency when you wait so long, did I miss something or was I wrong? And it turns out, no, this is the time it took. In fact, I know you often on your channel, and I talk about it too, silver, who knew it was going to be October of 2025? That's when it turned out to be. It could have been the year before, the year after, but here it is. Now, in terms of the sell-off, I know the silver price is down another dollar today, so it's possible this has changed, but at least prior to that, Charlotte, you're aware this isn't even the biggest silver sell-off we've had this year, because after the reciprocal tariffs on April 2nd, silver futures, I think were over $35 when the announcement came out, and they ended up below $28.50, I forget the exact price, but we did have this happen. We've had bigger sell-offs in silver. We had one happen this year, and most people don't even remember it because that was taking us from, I think it was 35 down under the $30 level, and obviously we're well past that. Okay, so where does that leave us now? Does that guarantee that we're going to have the exact same thing happen? Of course not. Yet also, it does suggest, though, that we could have that happen, and I know I may upset some people as I say this, but when you see the both gold and silver go up as fast, as quickly, and to the extent and magnitude that they did in such a short period of time, you don't have to, but I would suggest it's wise to expect that you would have something like this eventually. Now, with that said, does that mean that the rally is over? I'll put it like this, and maybe you might agree. I've been interviewing everyone outside of Santa Claus on the silver market for the last 6 years. I've yet to find someone who can accurately say, well, this is where it's going to be next month. But when you look at the fundamental things that have driven the gold and silver price, on the silver side, we still haven't had a resolution to this supply gap in London. Now, the market did normalize, which means the spot price was back under the futures. It normalized for a day after that blew out early October. Now it's back in backwardation. We've seen about 40 million ounces leave the COMEX. I would ballpark about 5 million ounces left China. Although if you have a free float that's down to about 140 million ounces and the LBMA's daily turnover is around 250 million ounces, is 40 million ounces going to bridge that gap? We've had India stopped additions to their silver ETFs back actually that same day, October 9th, when the silver market ran into that crisis. Was Bloomberg a couple weeks later had a quote from JP Morgan. What was initially India, their reports were, well, we can't add shares to the silver ETFs because we're out, but we're expecting more in the next shipment. That was either October 8th or 9th. We're saying a week or two later. A week or two later, we see Bloomberg report that JP Morgan was telling clients India they have no silver for India for the rest of October into November. And what are we, today's November 4th. I checked before we started. I've not seen any indication that the silver has returned. I also think about how, remember what it was like after COVID and like people are, you know, beating the heck out of each other on that Costco, like to get more rolls of toilet paper. So thinking about that human dynamic, we had India had a surge in, I believe it was September, of gold and silver imports. And again, as I know you've heard, India traditionally price sensitive. So they're not as much the buy high, sell low. So here's a group that at a time when they typically don't buy, had a surge. And then you said, well, we ran out, you can't have any more. In the middle of festival season, I don't know, maybe if festival season's passed, demand comes down, but I also wondered, will there be some pent-up demand once silver returns? And still, we're in the middle of a deficit, so everything that I've seen so far, I can't I can't point to something that's like, okay, this is a long-term resolution of this. This looks like it bought some more time. And perhaps just the last thing I'll add there, there's Robert Gottlieb, the former JP Morgan precious metals managing director. He was on Kitco a week or two ago saying we need 100 to 150 million ounces. We haven't gotten anywhere close. That spread has narrowed, and we've seen the withdrawals slow down out of the COMEX. So I would say that could the metals prices go lower? Of course they can. But is what we've seen in these past couple of weeks, given the context it occurred within, is that an indication that this rally is definitely over? I would suggest not. And certainly we can dig into the gold side as well, but you have similar dynamics where the reasons that drove the prices to where they were are still there. And, you know, if you think, well, are we going to be higher or lower 5 or 10 years from now? I think if you can take that step back, and I get people want to know what happens sooner than that, but at least if you can think 10 years from now, do I see gold being at $3,000? Do I see it being possible that gold's at $3,000 given what's happening? I think if you can step back and think about that question, that can really help in terms of the decisions that you're making.
Yeah. I think that helps to show how you see the silver market right now. It makes a lot of sense to me. And I wonder if you can go a little bit more into the issues we're seeing with silver supply. You're mentioning, I think this is around the last time we were talking, we were having the problem with supply in London. And you mentioned it's normalized at this point, but it's not fixed. And you also were talking just now about India not having the silver that they want there. What do we need to see there to have these things resolved? We need silver to be moving. Can you maybe just elaborate a bit more on those?
Sure. I mean, it's a fascinating situation. I mean, obviously there's the money and the trading part that everyone has their different impact with, but in terms of a market event, and for the things that you do where you've been studying this for however many years, and then to see it happen in such wild fashion, and perhaps I can help explain that, because one thing is I've seen places where they say silver shortage. Now, I always try to be careful with that word, because especially, you know, if you're in media and talking about it and knowing that there's the belief, which I think is reasonable, that we could have a gap at some point, which kind of getting like the initial warning flares of now. So I don't think we have, well, I'll say that I was thinking we don't have a global silver shortage, because right now when I hear people say the COMEX is about to break, is that possible? Sure, although all that metal has gone over to the COMEX. So if there's ever been a time where the COMEX isn't in position to have a problem, they have about 500 million ounces of silver, which is 200 million ounces more than earlier this year. Now, on the other hand, in London, they have a silver shortage, or they had, I guess it's eased slightly with some of the metal going back there, but they were experiencing a silver shortage. What was also interesting about that Bloomberg article I mentioned, they said, according to someone familiar with the LBMA's thinking, they were saying this wasn't a geographic dislocation, but a genuine silver shortage, which that was also after the Royal Mint was talking about delays. You know how when people always say about, you know, if we run out of silver and seems like everybody always uses Samsung and Apple as the example of an electronics manufacturer. Well, the Royal Mint is not an electronics manufacturer, but do you want to call that industrial? I mean, they use silver to make their product, and they're talking about delays. And shortly after that happened, the LBMA is saying, at least according to Bloomberg, they don't think this is just the silver's here and not there. And over in India, I think it's pretty clear and straightforward. They have a silver shortage. They cannot buy it right now. So do we have an overall silver shortage? I was thinking not, but I found that LBMA quote in Bloomberg article quite intriguing. And what happened is that, because you have the silver in COMEX, but you have a shortage in London, that's why the market went into what's called backwardation, where normally the futures trades at a higher price than the spot price. But because there was you saw the price in London getting bid over, which is called backwardation, which doesn't normally happen. But and here's this was the stunning part back on that October 9th date I mentioned. Remember waking up that morning to post our morning show and saw, wow, it's up to $1.20. I mean, yeah, normally futures 20 or 30 cents over spot, depending on how close you are to expiration. So when it goes negative, let's say it goes to negative 20 cents, that's really 40 cents out of line because you're going from over 20 to under 20. So I think on that Tuesday the 7th, it was about 20 cents. By Wednesday, it was at 50 cents. This is already somewhat extreme territory. By that Thursday morning, it was at $1.20. And then about 2 or 2.5 hours later, it was up to 250. So that, when I mentioned before, the day the silver market broke, that was really the epitome of that. And when the price was over, that's when silver started leaving the COMEX. LBMA only publishes their data monthly, so we don't know how much has been restocked. Presumably that silver is going to the LBMA, or it could be going directly to India. Takes a little while to get there, and we're kind of in limbo now, waiting to see what the net effect of that is. So what could resolve it? Well, I guess if all the, you know, if enough silver leaves the COMEX, that could resolve it. Although, again, we're still in the midst of the deficit. And I guess you could say now the conditions have changed in the mining equities market. But, you know, if it's going to take a couple years or decades for that silver to come to production, I still think we're in the same net position that there's a mismatch and we're seeing this unravel. And the fact that market exited backwardation and was normalized where futures over the spot about a week ago, and then it went back into backwardation. So clearly an indication this isn't solved. I don't know that there's really, I don't see a long-term resolution out there. It's like when you have someone checkmate on the board, you can, you know, like, oh, maybe the answer's under the table over there. You can keep. But it reminds me almost like the U.S. balance sheet situation. You can sit here and say, like, well, maybe we can get them to look over there and we'll slide this under the table. But it's bankrupt. You're going to have to do something. I think the possibility that eventually there's some sort of gold revaluation is growing. And if I may distinguish, just to be clear, we have what's already been introduced in legislation through that Strategic Bitcoin Act. There's policy about that, not enacted yet, but in its legal stages, where you can read that document and see they talk about revaluing the Fed certificates. The other more extreme case is if at some point we have a Sunday night where it's like, hey, we're raising the gold price to 15 or 20,000, which would allow them to knock off more debt. Even that is a short-term solution, because let's say they raise the price to 30 grand, remark the Fed certificates, pay off a chunk of debt. But if this situation doesn't change, like, that's what hit me the other day, where 50 or 75 years from now, unless you have the government stop spending, you're still in that wheel, which is why at the end of the day, hey, if you paid $4,200 for gold and it's below $4,000 now, when you start thinking through some of these things, let alone the whole dynamics with China, the move to onshore, and how all this gets funded, what happens to the bondholders, that leaves me feeling that as the years go by, and I get it, because we talked about it last time. Well, do you go out and buy gold now at 4,000 as opposed to when it's just had a historic move? And if I were trading in and out of it, probably not. Although if I'm thinking, well, if I want to leave something there for the longer term and I take that step back, then that, again, I think helps make the decision easier for people.
Well, and I think on the note of how does this have further to go, et cetera, You wrote recently about how some of the big banks are going on a bit of a hiring spree because they want to hire gold and silver traders. They want to maybe also offer vaulting services. So maybe you can speak about that, because I think that adds to the case in some way.
Yeah, well, first of all, I know that I could be partly guilty for this. There's a tendency when people hear that Goldman said this, JP Morgan said that, to think that, oh, well, they have some insight. They know what's going on with the price. I don't think that's generally the case. I mean, obviously, we know the spoofing has occurred and there's stuff that's inappropriate that goes on. Yet, I think there's a belief that the guy at JP Morgan or Goldman knows what's going to happen. I think we're in a situation right now where it's like, who was going to win the game 7 of the World Series? Well, until it was played, you could have a good guess, but nobody knew for sure. This is an ongoing situation here that is unresolved. So I don't think they necessarily know, but that's an indication that at the very least, they're getting a lot more business. B, from my experience on Wall Street, they tend to overhire when a market is hot and overfire when the market is cold. So to some degree, on the banking level, there's enough that they're seeing in terms of the increased business and what they expect going forward that they're adding to staff here. And like you mentioned, there was another one where some of the other banks want to cut in on some of the services JP Morgan offers. So some indication that on the banking thinking, which I don't remember that happening before, because back in 2011, I remember giggling at some of these bank reports where, you know, they had, you know, gold was up at 1900 and you'd see like their long-term forecast was 1200. I guess they turned out to be right on those. But I mean, this would be an indication that their thinking is a bit different than what we've seen before.
Can you maybe just elaborate a bit more on the Trump administration's plans for gold? And I wondered if you could go into that and share your thoughts there, what you're seeing.
Well, sure. I mean, it's been a fascinating year. We've had everyone in the Trump administration, it seems like, talk about the overvalued dollar. There's Stephen Miron, who wrote a 41-page paper called Restructuring the Global Financial Trading System in November of 2024. They didn't put a date on it, whether it was before or after Trump was elected, although talked ad nauseum about the overvalued dollar. At one point, he said the root of all economic imbalance is tied to the overvalued dollar. Trump wins the election, and a month later in December, he nominates this guy for chairman of the Economic Councils of Advisors. Now, I think he now has a position in the Fed where he's voted for 2 rate cuts at each of the last 2 meetings. I've heard good arguments presented that, was it a coincidence that the dollar index dropped from 110 to under 100 in the time since Trump's team came into office? Have they been influencing loosely or directly the price? Can't give you an exact answer. I think there's reason to believe that could be the case. And here's another thing that is interesting to think about. We talked about the 2 types of gold resets. Though we'll leave aside the more extreme one where they say, hey, we're taking it this price. I think that could happen. I think over a long enough time frame that it's like, what else are they going to do? But we'll stick to the first case where if you're going to say, all right, we're going to reset, we're going to reprice the Fed gold certificates from the 4222 to the market price. Well, here's the interesting thing. As the price is going up now, that means the higher the price goes when they remarket to market price, what happens is that that gets remarked by the Treasury or by the Federal Reserve, and the difference in the price goes into the Treasury account. So the higher the gold price goes now, the more money the Trump administration would get by enacting that move. And I heard, I think people know I'm a big Luke Gromin fan, and he had some interesting comments that I agree with, where I think for a long time it was viewed the U.S. and government forces, well, hey, if we see gold and silver screaming, that's a reflection that people are losing faith in our currency. I tend to agree with Luke that I think we're at the point where even the Washington establishment realizes, oh, like, okay, we have a problem now. This, what we've been doing the last 50 years. And you even heard Scott Bessent, I haven't seen him say it, but I saw the quote where he said the rise in gold price has been good for the U.S. And I would say what I just mentioned is one of the big reasons why. So seems like a different shift there in terms of what they want, what the incentives are, and
I've tried listening to ESG years.
I think we're seeing that play out right now. Some of it, you got to read the tea leaves. So it's not a matter of someone's writing it down in policy. But if you look, part of it, they've told you. They've said the dollar's too high. They've said they want to bring manufacturing back. And you can do that. You're going to need a lower dollar to balance these things out. So it's one of the rare cases where this time they're telling you what's going to happen, and it's happening. And these are some of the reasons why I think they're okay with it happening. And when you look at it like from that perspective, it again helps answer that. Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen next week. But in terms of the longer term, I think as you see these things unfold, it helps your degree of confidence of, okay, 5 years from now, how sure am I? Well, might have been this sure, but after the things I've seen this year, that has gone significantly higher. And same with the silver gap. Like, maybe there's a way it gets resolved, but it's becoming increasingly harder to figure out what else that could be except the pricing levels.
Right. So the focus is on the long term for both silver and gold. I think it makes a lot of sense right now. And I know I have to. Oh,
if I may, the focus may not be on the long term. I think it's a good place to put the focus. It's not always there, unfortunately, but interrupting.
I see what you mean. No, I was going to say, I know I need to get you back out. You've got your live stream to do. But any quick final thoughts before I let you go?
Yeah, just keep watching Charlotte's channel and you'll know everything you need to know. And perhaps I would suggest that for the people watching, which I know for most of the people is a long time, you know, yes, continue. I hope this was helpful and continue listening to different views. But I would also point out that you already have a base of knowledge if people are watching your channel or coming to the New Orleans conference, and draw back to that. You don't need to do anything because I say it or believe what I say, but you have this information. Now you've been given a confirmation that your thesis was correct. And I would just tell people to trust that and value what you've picked up through this process and use that going forward. And, you know, you learn as much as you can, but if you have your own solid understanding of what's happening, that usually a pretty good formula.
Okay, well, very good words to end on. Thank you so much for coming on. Good to see you in person. Thank you again.
Likewise. Thanks so much, Charlotte. Great to see you.
Of course. And once again, I'm Charlotte McLeod with investingnews.com. And this is Chris Barkas.